Welcome, everyone, to Midday Magazine. I have your host, James J. Mailoff here, and we're welcoming into the WFHR stage one of our favorite people, Anna Mitchell, with UW-Madison Extension Wood County. She is the Regional Natural Resource Educator over there. Anna, it's good to see you.
Good to see you, too, James.
Thanks for being here, as always. Really do appreciate the time you're with us. I know, for one, my father loves these interviews, but I know a lot of our listeners really appreciate. Sometimes they're learning things, and sometimes they're hearing something that's kind of confirming things mm-hmm. for them. And then there's talking about subjects that we don't necessarily get a chance to really dive into very mm-hmm. often. That's kind of where we're going today with pollinators.
Yeah, I know pollinators is a really popular topic, but I don't think we dive as deep into it as what we probably should. We just hear save the birds, save the bees, save butterflies, which is wonderful, right? But let's dive into a little bit more of the why and what pollinators are.
You know, and especially with No Mow May going on yeah. for many communities. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I think a lot of us here at the station deal with when we're really promoters, we're really big supporters of No Mow May. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you hear from people, why? Why right. No Mow May yeah. and that? And I think some of this might explain and answer some of that for people.
I sure hope so.
So what are pollinators?
Yeah, so pollinators are anything that help carry pollen from a male part of the flower known as the stamen to the female part of another flower, which is known as a stigma.
Mm. So, and I did check. We can say that on the air.
Oh, okay.
Joke, I'm joking.
Yeah, so pollinators basically help any plant that needs a kind of flowers or just any pollination to reproduce. Mm. So the movement of this pollen must occur for a plant to become fertilized and produce fruit, seeds, young plants. Mm. Some plants are self-pollinating while others may be fertilized by pollen carried by the wind or water, but a lot of plants are reliant on pollinators like insects and animals to help them reproduce or produce their fruit. In fact, pollinators enable the reproduction of 85% of all flowering plants and 67% of agricultural crops.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Speaking to the importance of pollinators.
Yeah. Because of their importance to the ecosystem, we can refer to pollinators as a keystone species, which means that they're an organism that helps hold the ecosystem together. Mm. So without pollinators, our ecosystems would fall. And they're a keystone species in almost all of our ecosystems in this world.
You know, anybody who's watched a disaster movie, like knows how this goes. Like, you know, if we lose one of these things, and in all seriousness, there's a reason why young in grade school, we learn about the food chain.
Yeah.
And we learn about these things.
Yeah.
I think that as we get older, we might forget some of that stuff, but it's called a chain for a reason.
Right.
Every link matters.
Yeah.
Without missing one, it's not connected.
Right. And those keystone species, man, they are... very, they are
really
very important.
When it comes to the reasons for these pollinators, why they are so important,
yeah.
if we can touch a little bit more on that.
Yep, so there's a couple of reasons why we want to think of pollinators as really important. So one that is really relevant to us is food production. Actually, one out of every three bites of food you eat exists because of pollinators and their efforts. Like, I'm just going to say that again. One in three bites of food you eat is because of the work of pollinators.
That's incredible. Thank
so if you. That's not effort enough to yeah, like yeah. reason enough to want to, you know, protect them, I don't know what is.
Yeah.
They'll pollinate many plants like our fruits, our vegetables, and our seeds. A short list of crops that are pollinated by bees include apples, bananas, potatoes, coffee, alfalfa, tequila, or agave, and cranberries, which are really relevant to Wood County and here in central Wisconsin.
Yeah. We're not just speaking on the food that you eat, but the food that is produced by this state.
Yeah.
So many of our ag and our farm industry, so much of the economy of this state is built on.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then clean air. Pollinators help clean air. So we said that 85% of flowering plants and 60% or 67% of agricultural crops rely on pollinators, which means the more plants we have, the more clean air we have. Not only that, these plants help purify our water, and they also provide us with clean oxygen,
mm-hmm.
which is really important.
And it speaks to how amazing plants are and how amazing all of this process
yeah.
is and everything, that all the different added jobs that they do,
yeah.
along with all the other things that we're touching on here. And there is the economy end of this too. Is that I was just touching on a little bit there.
Yeah, this is, some of these numbers are going to be pretty mind-boggling. So in the United States alone, pollination by honeybees contributed to over $19 billion of crop production in 2010. I don't know. I couldn't find a, you know, current number on what that is, but 10 years, you know, 2010, $19 billion.
If it's anything close to that, you couldn't find a number because we're still counting it. It's that big of a number. It's that big. We haven't stopped yet.
Yeah, yeah. And then along with that, pollination by other insects, besides bees, they've contributed to nearly $10 billion of crop production. So pollinators alone in 2010 contributed a whopping $29 billion to our economy.
Can't even wrap my mind around that. Yeah. That is just incredible.
Yeah.
And I don't know about if the audience is doing this or not, but I know for me, when we're talking about this stuff and you mentioned something like that right there, because of the purpose of this conversation, one of the first thoughts I'm having is, well, what if we didn't have them?
Yeah.
And just boom, like that thought of that $29 billion of economics in this country, gone. Just gone. Along with, of course, other key factors here involving breathing and eating and some other.
Yes.
It's pretty simple stuff that you kind of need to be able to live.
Right.
I love that we're 5 minutes in and we already, I feel like we've already proven the importance of pollinators.
Well, good.
I should say you have, Anna. You have.
Good.
But we can keep going because I think one of the cool things that we have an opportunity to do here is to get people turned on to this and get people to realize, hey, this involves you too.
Yeah.
And my mother is a, as she likes to say, a former hippie feminist.
Okay.
And you know, talks about that a lot in those days and stuff. Nowadays, I would hope that we're all activists, that we're all caring about our pollinators, that we're all caring about our trees and our environment and everything. There's nothing hippy dippy about the future.
No,
nothing, you know, about caring about our lives and our kids having a future and those kind of things.
No, caring about the natural world and what we live in an ecosystem shouldn't label you as anything. You should just, you know, be stewards of the land. That's what we're here for.
Now, when we're talking about all these things, I think that there is the common pollinators we all know of. But it also helps to get into that a little bit about who are the pollinators.
Yeah. Like I said, when we started, you know, we think a lot about bees and butterflies. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more pollinators than that. And I think when we want to kind of list out what would be pollinators, we have to think about how animals pollinate. And then that will be kind of a key hint to who our pollinators are. So a pollinator will visit the flower in search of food, generally nectar and pollen. And during their time at the flower, the pollinator might brush against the flower's reproductive parts. And then unknowingly, they'll go to another flower and deposit the pollen.
They don't even really realize they're doing it.
They just part of what they do, how they're eating, right?
Talk about a happy accident.
Like, exactly. You know, I mean,
that really is great.
Right. So some examples of pollinators, like I said, we commonly think of butterflies and bees, but there are many different kinds of pollinators, like birds, bats, ants, beetles, flies, moths, wasps even are pollinators. Generally, animals or insects that can fly are the most efficient pollinators.
You know, certainly, like you said, the big hitters here we've thought of before. And I've even heard of flies and moths, wasps, those kind of things. But bats, I never heard of that before.
Yeah.
I actually, when I got the notes from you, I had to look into it a little bit because I was just so curious.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Like, I feel like we're learning more and more about bats as we're going along here. How important they are.
There's
like, they're not scary anymore or anything.
No.
They're just kind of a unique part of our culture, part of our life.
They're so underrated.
They really are.
They are so underrated, but they're so important. Like, so important. I think I have a little hint in here later on that I'll give you why bats are important. And it's funny, I think the last time we talked about invasive species. Well, in a conversation since then, I was talking about invasive species and somebody said, oh, bats are invasive. I was like, No, that's a really, really key. Yeah. They're key to a lot of our ecosystems, especially because they're pollinators.
We invite you, bats. Yeah. You're not invasive at all. We're welcoming you. We're inviting you.
Yeah. So besides, you know, the ones we've listed, you know, bats, birds, beetles, et cetera, there are some really unique pollinators in our world. One example, I've got a couple here, but an example is on the island of Madagascar. There are ruffed lemurs, black and white ruffed lemurs, that are the main pollinators for travelers' trees and travelers' palm, which is really interesting because they eat the nectar of those trees, so they're collecting the pollen on themselves, and when they go to tree, etc., right? They're pollinating those trees. There's a honey possum in Australia that pollinates the flowers from eucalyptus, which is awesome. Really cool.
Yeah.
Lizards, geckos, and skinks can be pollinators, so those are some of our reptile species. There's a couple in Brazil. And then slugs and gnats can even pollinate. So a really good example locally would be wild ginger. There's been many times where slugs have been seen pollinating wild ginger.
Wow. Yeah. Now, I don't want to get too into the weeds here, no pun intended. But when it comes to how these animals pollinate or how these insects pollinate or anything like that, but I'm imagining that it is a little similar to the bee, they're brushing into it and that kind of thing.
Yep.
So much of this doesn't seem like a design necessarily. It just kind of feels like this is the way that it was all attached and connected. Whether it was intended or not for it to work this way or not, who knows? It's above my pay grade. But it is so cool to kind of step back and see how all of this connects.
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful.
It really is. And it just reminds us again and again how we are all connected.
Yeah.
You know, and it's always, especially in a year and a time like this, to remind people of how, you know, we are more connected than ever.
Yeah.
What about how can you help pollinators?
Yeah, and I really want to focus on this. You know, we talked about pollinators, hopefully got you kind of ramped up to think about pollinators and being excited to protect them or get those gears turning. So you can help protect pollinators whether you live in an urban or rural setting. You know, one of the great things that you can do is you can conduct a habitat assessment on your property. It doesn't matter if it's a lot in town or you've got 600 acres out in the country, right? There's really great assessments that you can do. And these habitat assessments will be a great tool to identify practices where you can improve or they can even confirm practices that you've implemented right now. So the Xerces Society, X-E-R-C-E-S Society, has several different habitat assessment guides for different types of landscapes and for specific insects. If you really like butterflies, cool. They've got a whole habitat assessment on how you can improve your property for butterflies. So they're all on their website and they're really easy to understand. And it's like literally a checklist that you can go through, which is really cool.
My mom was curious about getting hummingbirds in her backyard and went to look into this and everything. It's a really user-friendly kind of site too.
Yeah, it is.
They do a really nice job covering covering all the bases, too, on something like this. We're speaking with Anna Mitchell, Madison Extension Wood County's Regional Natural Resources Educator. And when I get into landscaping with as far as how we can help pollinators, that's a big one as we're getting into our summer months here.
Yep, it is a big one. So I had to limit myself on how much I wanted to suggest for landscaping because there's so much you can do.
Yeah.
One of the things I want to stress, though, is plant native plants. If you are going to landscape, just plant native plants because they're considered the best choice because of their abundance of nectar and pollen for our local pollinators. In addition to that, they're really low maintenance. They're generally pest-free. They're really drought tolerant and they are great at controlling erosion. So if you're living, you know, either way, I don't care where you're living, native plants are good, but especially if you're living on any kind of surface water, like a lake or a stream, river, etc. So when you plant those native plants, I wanted to give some examples so people would know maybe what to look for. So there's three categories that we're going to focus on. One is pollinator superfoods. These are phenomenal food sources for our pollinator species in Wisconsin. And some of those plants include milkweed, bee balm, goldenrod, and asters. Those are just a couple. Like I said, the Xerces Society has really good resources to dive into this a little bit deeper. But those are just four species that we can start with, right? food for specialist bees. So these are bees that are local and they need like a specific plant in order to eat. So some of those are lead plant, partridge pea, wild lilac, and dogwood. So like I said, these plants provide food for our native bees who are specialists that only collect pollen and other resources from these specific plants.
You know, when you do these things and you plant these, you're really going to see some of the effects of this,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
That's kind of one of the cool things about this. I've seen videos of people that do this before and after kind of stuff, and it's really unique to see. And it really adds to the life of their lawn, the life of their backyard, if you will, or anything.
If you don't, I mean, the maintenance of it, too, drastically reduces. Yep, these plants sometimes, you know, native plants, you have to take effort to plant them. But after that, they are really, really low maintenance. And the beauty that you will see to your property is, if you're driving and you see a prairie with it just beautiful, beautiful blooms, it's wonderful. Like me would prefer that over some of our, you know, ornamental plants, but that's just me.
And I do want to say something here, and this is just me speaking, but when it comes to, we're going to get into lawn and yard care a little bit more and everything, and if you ask anybody, why do we mow our lawns? You don't know, do you?
Aesthetics.
We've always done it. We've just always done that. But there's no rhyme or reason to it other than, like Anna said, there are aesthetics and everything.
Code if you live in town.
Sure. But why we have that code and why we have these things and what is beautiful? What is, you know, beautiful to one is not to another and everything. We get that as far as people. Lawns shouldn't be that different. It shouldn't be that big of a leap to make that going forward, it shouldn't be just May that we see these things.
Right.
It's just about aesthetics. And to me, I'm with you, Anna. I think that a lawn that has some healthy life to it and everything, I drive past that, I'm staring at that. I see another lawn that's just mowed, big deal. I've seen that all the time. I like seeing this. I think it brings personality to your lawn, to your house, to your yard, to your life.
Yeah. And it's funny because, so my husband and I rent right now. We don't own a home. We're currently in the process of looking for one. Thank you. But we have lawn envy is what we say. We'll drive past people's houses. It's like, you know, to each their own. But a yard that's beautiful and big, and it's just mowed. And Hunter and I both look at it and we're like, oh, the things that we could do, the plants, we would just let it grow and to natives and be so beautiful. And then the diversity you would see, you know, to take pride in providing back to our ecosystem is really cool.
And that yard work that you guys are dreaming about, let's talk a little bit about some of that. Let's get into some of that lawn and yard
for
care.
Sure. Yeah. Yep. So there's a couple of things you can do if you have a lawn and you want to care for pollinators. So one easy thing is if you leave your leaf litter on site, you're providing habitat for pollinators. This is really important in the spring too when they're re-emerging. They need that habitat. There's not a lot out there right now. So if you can just wait a little while to rake, that would be wonderful for pollinators. And then, you can use that leaf litter as mulch in other parts of your property. Compost it. You don't even have to compost it. Just leave it as mulch. It'll decompose and it'll put nutrients back into your flower beds, etc. garden. You can reduce your mowing frequency and increase your mowing height. And that'll allow some weeds to flower, which would be a food source, right? We think of our dandelions. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants dandelions. They are a food source, though. They are a food source for our pollinators. Here's the bat thing. You can install bat boxes.
Oh, I want to do this. You should. So cool.
You should. They're really cool. Like we said, bats are great pollinators, but they're also really, really, really great pest control for unwanted bugs. So some scientists have discovered that some small bat species, can catch up to 1,000 or more small insects in a single hour.
That's impressive.
That's your mosquitoes.
Yeah, exactly. That's the first thing I thought of.
If there's a mother bat who's nursing, that's been proven that they can catch up to 4,000 small insects an hour.
That's incredible. Yeah. Like, taking a moment. That's incredible.
Provide those bat boxes.
Yeah.
If you have a water feature, like, just a bird bath or any kind of water feature, put some stones in it so that your pollinators, like your bees, your insects that pollinate, they can land on that and drink without drowning.
Oh, yeah.
That is such a simple way to help pollinators.
Oh, God, I feel like I should have thought of that years ago. Oh, that's a great idea. Oh, that's really good.
Just a small stone.
Yeah.
So just also limit your use of pesticides. So a healthy yard with the appropriate plant and species, especially natives and their abundance, will bring pollinators in, and then they will be your pest control.
Mm-hmm.
You won't have to spend money on the pesticides. If you're bringing in your native pollinators, a lot of them are carnivorous as well. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say carnivorous because not just, meat, but they will eat other insects. And generally those are your pest insects that they're going to eat.
You're saving money while helping the environment.
Yep.
I mean, boom, boom. There's win-win-win kind of situations. Anna, as we're wrapping up here, mm-hmm. just a couple minutes left, we want to encourage people to get involved on this and how they can.
Yep, for sure. So I did some digging. I know May is right around the corner, right? Mm. Tomorrow, actually. Yeah, well, yeah.
It's May.
It's May. Anyway.
They already know it's pre-recorded. That's okay.
It's May. No mow May. Mm. So in the city of Wisconsin Rapids, the Common Council adopted a resolution to designate May of 2024 as No Mow May.
Mm-hmm.
So the code for May, you won't get fined if you don't mow your grass.
Yes,
have to come back into compliance after May. Yeah. Anyways, if you want to participate in No Mow May, you can actually stop at the mayor's office on the third floor of City Hall and get a free No Mow May sign for your yard, as long as they have some left there.
Yeah.
But each property owner that participates can stop and get a free sign.
Yeah.
And then you're voicing to your neighbors what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Which is cool. And then you're getting others curious about it.
Mm-hmm.
So not only that, we can create and advocate for habitat in our community hubs, like our libraries, schools, senior centers, or any unused spaces like our sidewalk mediums. If you have some kind of like pollinator system, or you're improving habitat for pollinators in your yard, put signage up so people mm-hmm. know, mm-hmm. especially if you're in town. There's a house by me and they have signage up, and cool. we walked past that the other day and I was like, good on you guys. That's mm-hmm. really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then host a tour. If you have like a really pollinator friendly yard, host a tour, invite people over.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Yep.
And there's always educating yourself as you wrap up with. I mean, that's an important one. You yourself can do so much homework and go down your own rabbit hole and discover so many of these things that I've been able to, thanks to people like Anna, but more so you can do. It's great to have an Anna if you can, but you don't need that. You can do it yourself.
Yep.
We've got these great supercomputers we walk around with mm-hmm. every day, and that you can look up anything on. And any of the things that we have talked about today, mm-hmm. encourage you to look into and find out more and research a bit more. And Anna, if people do have follow-up questions, want to know some more, how can they get a hold of you?
Yeah, you can stop into the extension office at the Wood County Courthouse, or you can email me at anna.m.james@wisc.edu.
Always a good time talking with you. Thank you so much for the time and all you put into our community, Anna. We'll talk again real soon.
Thanks, James.
We'll have more Midday Magazine for you coming up on WFHR Locally Grown Radio.